We are calling to order the Administrative Control Board meeting for Mountain Regional Water, Thursday, May 18th, and it is 6:02. Do we have any public input today?
We do not.
Okay. Then I guess we are on to Bowen and Collins.
I need a quick intro. Okay. So Andrew McKinnon's joining us. He's with Bowen Collins. He's been doing a lot of heavy lifting on a master plan. Andrew's got a ton of experience in master planning effort, including on the project in the Park City right now.
We've done Park City, we've done Southern Water, done a bunch of stuff down in Salt Lake area.
And a lot of regionalization efforts through Weber Basin.
Weber Basin, yeah.
They've been a great project for us. How long have you been with Bowen Collins?
Since 2008, so it's about 15 years.
So, got a lot of good experience on the team. Karen, and I, you kind of asked about the board meeting. We thought this would be a good time to give the group an update. We have a draft for the first section. Andrew and the team are kind of bringing the master plan up in the three main sections. This is the supply and demand portion, and kind of is the backbone for everything else. So we're at supply-wise, demand-side, and now I'm in the trying to get a crystal ball and looking at
it. Yeah.
So with that,
right.
And just a little something
to get around the mouse, right? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this figure real quick. This is just the overall service area. I kind of wanted to talk about how we're projecting the future growth. What we did is we started with Snyderville Basin, a residential equivalent, because Snyderville Basin has by parcel distributed, like that's where they think growth is going to happen. But that was just like a starting point, however. So we then basically created some maps of each section of the regional system and then sent that to the staff and got, we had several rounds of like feedback to say, okay, Snowmobile Basin's got a bunch of septic, you know, units that's going to transition to collection, but so that's not new water. That's not rewilding, and that's just, specific versus Snyderville Basin. And then in addition to that, we went and looked at, you know, areas where there's connections that likely not going to develop. We looked at all, like, each area went through and said, okay, how many REs are there? What do we think Promontory is going to do? What do we think Silver Tongue is going to do? And we took the map and basically created a build out projection of, like, growth in the district. So once we had that, let's go to the next graph real quick. Once we had the build out target, we had like the beginning target down on the left. It's really cares. So we have 2015 growth through about 2023, and then we have our build out. And what we did is we took just a logistic growth curve, which basically grows it, you know, a little bit faster than being in sort of paper dump. And we set up a logistic growth curve to target about 99% growth by 2065. And with that growth, you get basically a curve that looks like this. Over the last several years, we've had some significant growth in ERCs, and there's some different ways to account for ERCs, and we'll get into that maybe a little bit later. But in general, our growth curve is starting out sort of matching kind of well with 2015 to 2017. There's a little bit lower percentage growth then we're projecting out starting to begin with. But one of the things I think probably useful to just look at as a sort of a gut check is just look at the growth between 2023 and 2033, or even use 2025 and 2035. And just the magnitude that we're thinking, you know, between the bars, it's about 2,000 ERCs. It's sort of the general target. And that's sort of an average ERC. And we know that in the Promontory area alone, we're expecting about 1,000 units. So that's of their units, and the ERCs may actually be a little bit more than that. We'll get into how we're projecting growth on an annual basis. So just to review our percentage
Andrew,
of growth. Yes.
Excuse me. With that 2,000 ERCs per 10 years, what was
that's about 2,000 ERCs over the next 10 years.
Over 10.
Yeah. And then you can look at the numbers a little more closely here, but yeah, it's roughly 2,000.
So why do we think the growth is going to be so steep, is going to continue to be so steep, and then just completely flatten off?
It's a good question. Logistic growth curves are intended to sort of if you target a certain percent by 2065, and you're starting with a certain growth rate, you kind of have to try to taper it and make it look like it makes sense. Or so if you want to get to that 99% by 2065, it kind of forces you into a specific range. Now, it is still somewhat objective. Does that look okay? Does it feel okay? I think the gut check on the 2000 ERC is probably what we would want to think about, because honestly, beyond 10 years, we don't really care, right? So we're going to focus on that first 10 years. And the percent growth that we have, if we don't feel like the 2000 is realistic, maybe we can pare it back, and that's a reasonable thing. But it's just kind of really is a crystal ball. This is our best guess, but it is still just an estimate, it's not going to be precise.
I have a question. In the first draft that we saw in that chart, it had about 6,000 ERCs, mm-hmm. and now we're showing close to 8,000 ERCs for 2022.
For 2022.
So I'm just curious, that's a pretty big change, or what changed from the drafts together.
So a lot of this, I don't know if I have that table in this specific.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah.
Because that originally, when we looked at it last time, was like 6,000.
And it kind of has to do a little bit with how you define an ERC. And we actually went back and forth on that specific topic a couple times, because the state of Utah defines an ERC just by connections, residential connections, and how they define an ERC. And then basically you take residential connections, divide your water use by residential connections, and then take the balance of your non-residential by that demand for ERC, and that gets you your total ERCs. So their number is pretty different from Mountain Regional's, and it's pretty different from what Snyderville Basin would consider like an RE. But what we did for 2020, Mountain Regional's ERC versus Snyderville Basin's RE were actually pretty close to each other. So we felt like for 2020 it was reasonable, and then 2022 is kind of using the latest approach for accounting on ERC. But you're right, there's a lot of different ways to sort of like.
And it's different than, for example, what we use for our billing ERCs, which is closer to the 6,000 number that we've, and that's what we've technically used in our.
So the 7948 is also the same number that's used in concurrency.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm just confused.
So it's probably a close to the billing unit, in terms of ERCs, but it's not 100% billing. You've become the same on that.
Because I thought we were closer to 6,000. Aren't we at 6-something, Steve?
Total. Well, connections units is probably about 6,400, I think.
At the end of
2022.
In ERCs. Our ERCs.
Our billing units is about. So that's where if a home is big, it gets four. Like, for example, a home in the colony, all the townhomes, everybody else gets one, whether they use half an acre or 100,000 gallons or whatever.
What year did you guys start using that billing?
Oh, since I've been here, so at least 2018.
And then years prior to that did not have an increased billing unit or billing ERC, correct?
When was it, 2016?
It's when we started doing it across the board. Like 14, 15.
Well, yep. How long, for the impact fee, that's how
2014
we do it.
Was when the impact changed.
Yeah.
And that's when you changed how you calculate how the billing system. They can choose 1.4 or 1.8, like just one or whatever their house check.
So it's a mixed data set, right? We have a lot of connections with the billing unit of one, and a lot of connections after the date that have a greater than one billing unit. So it's a good data set, but I don't think it's a good. It's not apples to apples comparison.
For a system like yours, it's really difficult to come up with an ERC. Because of just how different demands are across the system. And we run into the same thing in proximity. And in terms of defining an ERC, it's really difficult to define a single ERC. So for example, for proximity, their impact fee is actually charged dollars per peak day of demand in gallons per minute. So we look at how many units it is. The developer has to come and say, this is going to be our peak day demand in gallons per minute. And then we charge $1 per gallon per minute for that peak day demand. And we just totally eliminate the whole ERC discussion because of how difficult it is. Because they've got, lodges, and we've got, single family homes without irrigation, single families without outdoor irrigation. So it's, and you guys are really similar to that. You have just really large discrepancies in use type. So just moving on in terms of projecting demand, one of the decisions we had to do, like, to start the process is, what year do we want to start our projections of peak day demand from? And based on your historic demand, so this is data from 2010 to 2022, 2020 was the peak annual use and the peak day demand use. And that's probably not very surprising for anything. If you think across the state, we saw 2020 as the peak use. And then 2021, 2022, both those years we've seen drought, implementation plans affecting that demand. So, you know, every one of the cities that we do master plans, we're seeing droughts in demand 2021 and 2022. And that's throwing the state for a little bit of mm-hmm. because they're doing calculations from 2020 to 2022 as well.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah.
Sorry, I took a lot of notes on this. How can the peak day demand be less than the annual demand?
So you'll note that we're actually looking at, on the left, we have culinary annual production in acre feet. So that's going to be on the black lines represented by that.
Okay, so the peak day demand is on gallon.
And then the peak day demand is actually measured down per minute. So the blue line is higher on the graph. But yeah, basically, like, you know, it's, they're different units, and we're just kind of trying to show which one's higher. Does that answer your question?
No. So how did, so again, I was trying to figure out how the peak day demand would be less than the annual demand, but now, so how does gallons per minute correlate to acre feet?
So acre foot number is a volume over the course of an entire year.
Yeah.
Whereas a gallon per minute is a flow rate over a day in this case.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's like, what's the relevance between the two lines?
Let me show you a graph. Might be helpful. We're skipping ahead a little bit, but we might be able to show. So what you really want to compare, if you want to compare like apples to apples, the average day demand to peak day demand, we do have a graph of that. Your conservation. Watch there. Right there. So ADD is average day demand. So you take your annual demand and divide it by 365 days, convert to gallons per minute. So this is your annual number right here. So, you know, it's roughly half of your peak day demand. A little less than half, actually. But that's how you would compare peak day demand to annual demand. Does that help answer the question?
Well, that makes more sense. I'm still not sure why the two are
on the same graph.
Yeah.
Well, like this is maybe be a better comparison.
Yeah.
Like,
what is that one trying to show? I guess.
So, yeah.
Mostly, like a lot of the time, like water rights, state of Utah, they're interested in your annual volume use, and so they don't look at average day demand necessarily. Use.
So this is just trying to put your annual and your peak day on the same
graph. And so this does a similar function.
Yeah.
It's showing both on the same graph. But it just kind of depends on who you're trying to communicate to. When we're communicating to the same top acre feet and gallons per minute, sometimes we use milligrams per day. But yeah, that's why it's just different units. But this is communicating something very similar. So. All right, so next we want to talk about how we're projecting demands by areas. So we talked about how Mountain Region has really different service areas, so we have these different tank zones that we've set up for the district. And what we've done is we've calculated the ERC, so we have a 2020 ERC in whatever unit that, however we count that. And then we have projected growth in ERCs. So that's that. I think that should actually be filled out in ERCs, not projected growth in ERCs, but So you'll see, like, for example, there's some areas where there's really not a lot of growth. That's a good example. This is growth. So Atkinson is projected to grow by 3,200 ERCs. And then let's see.
So is that correlation?
And Silver Spring, for example, you're only getting 7 additional ERCs to build out.
Is that correlation accurate that you're saying Atkinson's only 50% built out right now?
Based on feedback from staff, that was...
I just want to make sure that the units are...
Yeah.
Well, they're not even...
Yeah.
So they're not even half that.
So there's a lot of room for growth in Atkinson with those ERC types. But you'll also notice that we have a planning demand by tank zone. This is acre feet per ERC. So what we're trying to do here is predict, okay, like the Dutch draw, like tank zone, only has 4 additional ERCs to grow. But you'll see that the 2.71 versus 0.38. It's basically saying those 4 units are going to be large units. They're going to be using roughly twice the demand of like some of the units in Atkinson. So rather than trying to say, okay, we're going to double the amount of ERCs, we're looking at the number of units we think are going to grow in that area, and then we're basically trying to project demand per unit for that specific area. Does that make sense?
And so you use the 2020 annual demand, which was the highest we've ever experienced.
Right. So we use 2020 demand as the baseline, assuming that future growth looks like existing growth.
Because like Atkinson, I mean, it would be here.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of, and is there promontory on Atkinson?
Well, no, promontory would be Middle Valley. And then if you scroll down like a couple lines, there's the Middle Valley and West Hills, which seems like
some on
seems like too many.
I mean, what is in Atkinson? Because this is all Atkinson.
There's a portion of
there's a little bit prompt, very low this country.
So
these are tanks.
Yes.
So I guess so, maybe our historical isn't always indicative of the new growth that's coming on that might be much lower. So was that taken into consideration?
Where we could. So like, so we try to basically project, and we are relying on staff feedback a lot on like planning. Like some of the existing zones don't have that many units in them. Like Pine Meadows, for example, like there's not that many units, so we can help them.
Yeah, and that was, it's more the larger, like at Atkinson, obviously, that's probably the largest of all of those, and you know, 0.38 acre feet. I'm not sure just the correlation seems like a lot for a lot of the product that's coming on back there.
Yeah, so your typical like quarter acre lot down in Salt Lake area is going to use about half an acre foot per like unit, just roughly speaking.
Condos, townhomes, like that.
Condos, townhomes are going to use less, right? So you're the lowest end that we saw, I think, was closer to 0.25. So that's going to be primarily indoor use, which is the 0.25. And then anything above 0.25 is basically showing more and more outdoor use. So you get to 0.71, and we're expecting quite a bit of outdoor use for those new connections. So we did that on an annual demand basis, and we did a very similar process on peak day demand. So we have, probably worth mentioning, we're also, as part of the master plan, this table is basically highlighting the fact that 2020 we had a whole bunch of Summit Water Distribution Company demand. Planning for that demand is zero. And then I will say that this one is a little higher than the earlier one, only because there's an instantaneous sports demand that we have to model because of potential effects of that system on your water system.
Yeah.
But for planning, we basically assume that some water is going from, you know, high to zero. I don't know that we need to spend a lot of this. Just shows like the different connections you guys have to other entities. It's useful to know. I don't know that it helps with the supply and demand study outside of knowing that some of like the Sunwater branch road that demands can go away. And then like annual demand, we did a similar process for the peak day demand. So again, we're basically taking your historic demand, assuming the future units in that tank zone follow sort of that development pattern and our projected demand going forward.
I mean, because
I know we talked about the 2020, because that was an incredible revenue year and usage year. And I know 21 and 22 are both kind of skewed low.
Yeah.
But like when I'm doing revenue projection growth, I kind of do more of an average.
You probably need to do the opposite of what we would do.
Yeah.
Right.
But still, is it right to assume that 2020 usage will be what's going forward with so much pressure on people to conserve water and the turf removal programs and new laws and things? That's because 2020 is kind of a weird year to build off of, just like using 2022 would be a weird year to try to build off of.
Right.
Too.
So, I mean, we are seeing a trend down in demand per ERC. But, like, you'll see the 2020 is not that far off from, like, sort of this average. And then in addition to that, the district does have a conservation plan that is included as part of this document. And now the big question that everybody asks is the conservation plan that you guys have adopted going to match future growth, you know, suitably enough? And that is something we can discuss, and we'll go through that a little bit more and talk about some of the assumptions in that.
Yeah, so just touching on this figure real quick, to put this together, Steve, so that touches on your question. This is looked at usage both on peak day and the annual basis per ERC. So when you trend it, which is the blue line trending peak day usage, you can kind of see that 2020, for example, wasn't that far off the trend. As far as usage per connection, I don't know if we can say that in outlook.
So this is 2020 peak days?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's trending as above, and if it's going to continue to trend, but we're basically taking this and drawing a straight line for usage.
Not quite. So when I say we're projecting demands out, we are doing that, but we are including conservation too.
Okay.
So in the tables, you'll say demand for ERC today is going to be 0.71 acre feet. You know, if you were 0.71 acre feet in 2020, today we're going to say you would be 0.71 acre feet without conservation. Does that make sense?
But then we build in conservation.
Then
so the 0.71 becomes 0.7 and 0.89
right.
And 0.68 as it goes out, the model does that.
Yes.
Yeah. That's just a question.
Does it hit a asymptote where
so the district's goal is to conserve 10% by 2050. And I'll go ahead and put back that if we're on the topic.
That matches strategy. That matches
So the district's goal is 10% by 2050. What I've shown here is actually the state of Utah's goal for the Weaver River drainage area. And so this is only helpful in understanding that between 2040 and 2065, the state has planned basically another 4% of the conservation. But your goal only goes through 2050. So to sort of match or parallel the state's goal, we just assumed that beyond 2050, you guys would parallel the state's goal. So we actually have getting 13% of conservation by 2055. Is you're getting 10% by 2050. That makes sense? So state's going for 26% for the Weaver River overall, and that may include a lot of, like, you know, irrigation connections that have no meters on them. I know for a fact that that's the case in a lot of the Weaver area drainage. Davis County, for example, is part of the Weaver River, and there's a whole bunch of connections that from Davis County that don't have any meters on them today, and that's, you know, the state of trying to correct that. And I know Water Conservation Districts, you know, got big programs to and secondary, but that's going to be a big part of that.
Hopefully, the dams of what?
Weaver.
The 179 that they want a goal for 2065, you gave us the number the other day of what we are, right?
We're way below.
Yeah. We're like already below.
Well, last year.
Last year.
Which is an outlier.
You're a little bit of an outlier. But even with 2020, we would have probably been behind below 179.
Right.
I'd have to run it.
You'd have to run it. But we're really good conservers already. But so meeting state requirements won't be any problem for us, or shouldn't be.
You will not have a hard time
getting
meeting. Right?
Yeah.
So that's the reason why your guys' goal of 10% compared to the state, which is by 2040, 22%. And it's probably reasonable considering you're starting out at a much lower starting point. But we did feel like, you know, 2050 is a great goal. We just want to keep it going for 2065. That's our final new. So that's what we're based on. And we discussed the new landscape ordinance that was adopted. And that's important because one of the big assumptions that we're applying, the landscape conservation projection applies 24% demand reduction on future demands only. So it's basically saying that future demands, future users are going to use 24% less than they would be projected to use anyway. So like that 0.71 is already high. So that's already going to be reduced by 24%. Does that make sense?
And what's the number in Atkinson?
0.38 acre feet. So
yeah, there's not a quite that much apple.
Yeah.
But there's also a turf removal program that we have adopted that the state has approved.
And that
counties that have instituted a new development, is that calculated in anywhere for our existing customers?
So the overall goal is 10% reduction, and we kind of, like, we don't care whether it happens from new or existing, and then the overall is 13%. So if, for example, like, you take all of the future users apply that 23% reduction, you're not going to meet your 10% goal. Does that make sense? If you only new users conserve water, you're not going to get to your 10% reduction in water use. Doesn't make sense. So existing users have to do something in order for you to hit your 10% reduction goal.
But we're basically two-thirds of the way filled out. Because if we're saying we're at 8,000 ERCs right now,
12,000,
we're going to finish at 12.
Yeah.
If we're two-thirds of the way. Yeah.
Yeah. So the future users alone, like, sometimes, with some studies, if they're like, you know, depending on how much growth there is, if there's a lot of growth remaining, that 24% can get them, you know, a lot of way to the conservation plan.
Well, I think the type of product that we're seeing coming on, which is much smaller, will
affect your overall, but we're only projecting demand for those small units based on available.
And I guess other thing that drives it is just our rate.
Right.
So we just did a rate increase to try to tier those higher levels to be more conservative. So I'd imagine, based on what we saw with our drought rates, there was a reaction financially, but, you know, that financial trigger was hit because of those drought rates. So I don't think there's any, I just think that 10% is easily accomplished.
Is it easily accomplishable
in 25 years?
The question becomes is, how much more would you want to plan? So the 24% plan to new growth, I'm going to say one other component embedded in that is that the 24%, we're getting that from mostly front yards. Because if you apply the landscape, just the county landscape ordinance to the front and back end, you can get to higher than 20%, probably closer to 50-60%.
But you're just not doing that because you're saying that nobody can physically go onto someone's property and inspect that what they said they were going to do, they didn't do.
Exactly. So the only instance where we've allowed, like, or basically said we will apply a higher conservation rate when the developer's been forced to landscape both front and backyards. So in those instances where, like, a city basically said, okay, developer, you have to landscape the front yard and the backyard, then we've basically said for planning purposes, we'll allow, you know, 60% conservation for that development. So because we have these developers saying, well, what about your landscape ordinance? And we're like, well, if you do both front and back, we'll believe you can get to that low demand. But the city's got to plan for, cities or districts have to plan for a certain amount of water. They have to buy that water ahead of time, most of the time. So if they don't plan for much water, there's, you know, it's going to cost everybody a lot more money. So if you force the developer to plant both front and back, then you can say we can get that. But if you don't have any sort of enforcement mechanism, the 24% will be recommended. Does that make sense? But that is a big assumption. Because you could have a lot of, like, people that come in and say, I'm only going to put, like, a little small patch of grass in my backyard, and that's it. But you have all these big lots, and, you know, like, you know, what is your opinion on the likelihood of that?
Well, I don't know what the county's going to do to enforce it, but I mean, they're showing that you can only do 30% of your irrigated space and be.
It's not just 30%. There's a 30% and there's also a square foot cap on the amount of like grass.
Yeah. So their enforcement mechanism, I mean, I don't know if that ever, we just adopted it. Who's going to be going around tracking that other than when it initially goes in?
And it's just the front yard. Right? And then the back yard, the general left of the property.
And if the property changes hands and a new person comes in and throws grass back in, there's some plot in the coordinates.
Yeah. So it all depends on the enforcement mechanism, and it depends on the assumptions going into the planning. Like, these planning documents are usually supposed to be on the high side, which can be bad, especially for the rate guys, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to plan a lot of water demand for revenue purposes, but for supply planning, this is what we usually do.
There's usually kind of a built-in significant contingency.
Yes.
And I kind of...
And it is all, we're also kind of following some of the state protocols for planning. This is kind of what the state would require. They would look at your last 3 years of demand and say, use the highest year and apply variability factor to it. And we'll talk about that a little bit more, but I just want to make sure you guys understand where the conservation assumptions are coming from. You could be more aggressive on your conservation assumptions based on this new ordinance and based on some of the other things we've discussed, but you know, for planning, for this planning document, we said, you're going to hit your goal, and that's as far as you go.
Because the two things kind of reading through this, and Sam and I didn't have a chance to meet this afternoon and talk about it, was the starting ERC. If that is potentially high, and it makes me feel that because it changed from this draft to the next draft. So just kind of finalizing where we're going to start, because we talked about the growth, and we brought the growth percentage down, but the starting number was a lot higher, so effectively we actually are asked to need more water supply.
So I will say we're starting from 2020 ERCs, and I felt like those numbers haven't changed as much. The 22 number didn't change quite a bit, but the 2020 number didn't change as much. Like we have.
Oh, and I didn't see that because I just saw the change from the 22 to the 20 from the draft.
Yeah, but for 2020, those ERCs we haven't played with. 2022 is basically. Like Sam was building those numbers as we were in the process.
Because that was just what we finalized as our starting ERC number makes a big difference because wherever you're at, you grow from.
And, so and like I said, we're starting at 2020, which is peaking.
And then I was just curious about the demand because I thought if we were using 2020 demand going forward, that's way too much because I think it's going to be too high.
It would be if we don't have conservation.
And it's still historically a really high usage year.
It is a high usage year.
So
the highest.
The highest.
So but those were my two things, because those two, I always refer to them as levers, move the final product
a lot. It's kind of a fulcrum, right?
Yeah.
More than a lever, because you're basically pivoting around a certain point, and that, you know, like starting higher or lower, you know, affects that.
Yeah.
You can change growth rates, but you're pivoting around one certain location. But yeah, you're right. 2020, starting with that year, but I mean, 2020 is the basis. It's an evolution of your growth and use. And then it was also a dry and hot year. So in terms of predicting future growth, you're worried about, okay, are we going to get a dry and hot year where we don't implement, you know, drought mitigation efforts again? If you don't think we'll ever get there again, maybe 2020 is too high. You might have a hard time convincing the state that's true.
But I don't think people are going to use water in 2020.
I agree with that, that you're not going to see 2020. I think you've already seen a lot of people ripping their strips and putting in more water.
Well, and I think with the Great Salt Lake push,
yeah, I mean,
a lot of people are going to, they're not going to use what they used in 2020.
Yeah. Which it gets into the conservation stuff, and you're like, okay, how much can I rely on, and how much can we plan for?
So, like I said, those are just two things that, like, okay, as long as those two things are what our starting point is, and what our growth is, and what our usage is, then I'm comfortable with what the final result is. So, I just want the more time we spend on those starting points, I think, will be important, just so we get a good final product.
Yeah. And I know this is just a draft, so I'm not saying this is what we're carved in stone and we'll
right.
have some iterations or whatever, but.
And obviously, like, it's less sensitive if you're further away from major projects, but you're not. Which, well, we can,
okay,
that's for future discussion, but for planning purposes, these are like conservative assumptions that we've normally applied. We kind of goes, we're just showing like some figures to show like this is how you use water seasonally. You guys have a little bit of a winter peak, not nearly as big as some like Park City's got a winter peak that's higher than their summer peak, just for comparison.
But they're economic peaks probably.
And then most cities don't have any kind of peak in the winter. So you guys have a little bit of a peak in the winter, but not much.
So this is new, we're keeping this Spring Creek spring.
No. So that is one of the assumptions in supply. Like basically your supply, available supply goes down because you're losing Spring Creek.
Okay.
That's a good question.
So then we get into some of the figures that show overall supply versus demand. And I kind of want to just emphasize that overall supply, raw water, you guys look pretty good. Like you got a lot of raw water. And so this is showing annual demand. Versus the annual source, and includes the Rockport well field, it's got the Lost Canyon phase one and two raw water rights, and then it sort of has sort of your maximum annual groundwater production in it. So from an annual raw water and colony water perspective, I mean, or just raw water overall, like you guys look like you have plenty of water. And I think that's true, like we have a lot of water. And then you get into, and then just, this is showing basically what we would predict happens in the over 2065, we'd be expecting to use this much more water in the summer based on growth. That's just trying to show what the action of water on an annual basis. And I will say that this is maybe a little misleading because the signal bill annual capacity assumes the treatment plant's operating at capacity full year, which isn't really yet something you would normally do or physically can do because you don't have that much demand to do around. Which is why we want to focus a little bit more on the total. This is total peak day and max source production. And is showing on a peak day basis, you are looking like you need more raw water on a peak day basis through 2065. You're basically looking good with conservation. You wouldn't need any more water until 2043 is the amount of raw water that you currently have and the capacity you have to pump. But it is showing that you would need to get more pumping or boosting or peaking capacity for raw water by 2065.
2043 or 2065?
Well, you need to begin by 2043. And that's with conservation. Obviously, without conservation, we'd say you need it to be able to close it to come with it. But we're assuming you're going to get to control. And then on a current peak day demand basis with source capacity, you have signal hill treatment plant capacity and your existing well capacity. And then you also note that your demands are fluctuating then drop at 2025 before starting to climb again. And that's primarily because of some water demand going away. And so this gray area, additional supply needed, reflect that, you know, basically beginning of 2020 to 2024, if you had lost like one of the major, your major sources, would have had a hard time meeting like peak day demand for those conditions. So let me just talk about the way this graph is being indicated. We're showing 2020 or your peak day demand projection. We're showing a variability factor on top of that. So this is similar to what the state requires. They basically calculate how much source do you need, and then they calculate a variability factor for each separate system, which maxes out at 20%. So that's what we're reflecting here, is basically a 20% factor applied to your peak day demand. Another way to think about this is, again, let's say you ignore these upper curves, because they're kind of hypothetical. And you look at this, and then you reduce your source capacity by like 20%. So you assume your wells go down by 20% or your signal hill treatment plant. You know, you lose some equipment and its capacity is reduced by 20%. So it's kind of two ways of looking at the same thing. This is the way the state has been sort of looking at things lately. They put your highest demand, and they add a variability factor, and then include all your sources, 100% of your sources. And so that's what we've shown here. And so we're showing that, like, you know, when Signal Hill drops off, you're going to have some little bit of excess capacity. But as you grow, as you get into that 2,000 ERCs of growth, you're eating into your basically reliable capacity, or you're eating into your variability requirement. If that makes sense. Our buffer,
but that means we need, so we need to expand Signal Hill by 2028. Is that what this is telling you?
With all the caveats we went over earlier, conservation, you know, like, you know, how much conservation you get, the amount of growth we're assuming, all those caveats are based on, but that is what we're showing here.
That's a good question. Yeah. So that's,
well, it's kind of alarming. That's like 5 years away.
Or find a different project other than Signal Hill.
Because we just need it for the peak.
Just the peak.
Yeah. Right? Just so people can water outside.
Yeah.
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 So, I mean, like, you have, how much control do you have over that? It kind of would come down to, right? Like,
if we have financial, you could do a well, because that would be a peaking, you know, that's how you try to mitigate the peak. You could try to mitigate your peak. Yeah. I mean, I think it just seems to me like to build, if it were like a treatment plant, that's an asset that would sit idle for the majority of the year, because we're only trying to meet a need that's for the summer season. Let's
right.
Say. Yeah. So it may be idle for 2/3 of the year. And
yeah. We call it peak day, but it's really like peak month, like July.
Yes, July.
Right.
It could be idle, but it could also allow us to sell water again, right? So there's other ways to use it if there is excess water. Whereas a well, you're drilling into something that's not known. The treatment plant would be a sure thing, assuming that water could pump over.
Because you have the raw water.
Or we send raw water to Park City. So there's, you know, a couple of different, but yeah, this is where we're at, 5-year window. That's why I kind of teed it up last month.
Yeah, it's probably the easiest one to understand.
No, it's a good figure.
So, I mean, like, if you are able to rely on, you know, capacity, then yeah, or if you can improve your conservation goals, that extends, you know, these sort of deadlines, but yeah, you can see how they go out. If we got another 2020 and you lost a source, you'd be in trouble. That's the bottom line.
You'd be in trouble for July.
For July.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about peaks a lot. Any combined system, meaning any system that has indoor and outdoor use.
Yeah.
Has a peak. So, and you have to plan source around peak.
That's
typical of any system in the state or country.
Right. And that's what the state's going to basically evaluate your source supply around, is do you have enough source to meet these requirements? And that's what it's going to be based on. And they're going to use your 2020 and they're going to use a 20% variability factor. And that's what it's going to drive their decision making, at least for the next few years. If you can go, you know, another few years and show, hey, we're permanent 2022. Demand
usage,
like it's, you know, been a permanent effect on overall users, that changes that fulcrum, right?
Yeah.
But for planning purposes, that's not necessarily the best, you know, approach.
What happens when the state finds out you can't meet your peak day demand? They shut you down. They can stop your roofs.
They apply like points
water
to your system.
So for our
sanitary
thing.
Yeah.
Their big hammer is if you come in with a development project, significant growth in this 2 years for city, they would not approve it through their plan approval if you're showing a source decision, which is pretty rare.
So they basically put stop work order on new development.
Even though you know you need that to get where you need to be, they stop you and keep you from getting there.
He's not talking about source development. He's talking about the development comes in to do a water.
Oh,
our water.
So nobody can add
infrastructure.
Yeah, we get it. Like if we were a concurrency user now.
You can no longer issue concurrent split letters.
The vision of drinking water, every asset in the district needs a plan approval, essentially. So that's very handy to enforce the source of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we build a new tank, it has an operating permit, right? And the system that goes that ties that, they wouldn't approve that.
Even if I would.
Yeah.
They handle that. We're not going to let you use it in the building.
Is the tank considered to be additional capacity to help kind of flatten the curve of the peaks?
Tanks are important in terms of managing like daily fluctuations in demand. Okay. Really, what you're talking about in terms of like
an equalization type of a thing.
Yeah, but you'd be more looking at like a culinary reservoir or something really okay. big. You could treat water for, you know, 3 more months of the year and then use it for the month of July, but that'd be horrendously expensive to build. And I don't know that it would be feasible, really. You see that all the time with raw water.
Round Valley.
Yeah, Round Valley was a concept for that, raw water. But yeah, for culinary water, you don't have that luxury. You guys don't really have, outside of the golf courses, you don't really have any secondary system that you'd be able to just rely on a large reservoir for that. And usually building a secondary system so you can do that is more expensive than, you know, building an additional culinary capacity.
Awesome. Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah. Any other questions for me?
The only thing, I've heard rumblings of a well going in at the Olympic Park. Has that been taken into consideration? But wouldn't that reduce their demand?
No, they can't. That'd be a raw water system.
Would it reduce their demand on kind of our...
Totally. And then one thing to keep in mind is this is all targeting peak season in the summer. And the one exception we have, the winter peak months locally at the Olympic Park. Their peak is the winter.
Yeah.
For a very short amount of time, sometimes a couple of weeks.
Sam and I were over to our concurrency meeting this week. We got a call from a developer. They're moving forward with building a hotel up there.
Right.
I think they're preparing for the Olympics. Mm-hmm. I don't see their demand up there. Even where the well is going to decrease, I think the demands are just going to increase. But one thing they don't have for that well right now is water rights.
They're stealing it?
Yeah. So that they can continue to attack us. There's other limitations up within the park.
Yeah.
Make it worthwhile. I think they can fill their pond at 300 gallons a minute. And their winter demand is over 2,000 gallons a minute. So there's a little imbalance.
So I mean, like, whether they get the well, and that will affect, like, for example, like, potentially you guys have a capacity deficiency in delivering water to the Olympic Park, which would require them to build additional facilities for them if needed. We haven't gotten that far in, like, Section 2, but, like, the well would have an effect on that, whether are we going to be building more pump stations, expanding right. capacity of pump stations or building bigger pipelines. But even if we did, we'd still be making them pay for it. So it'd be their decision on, okay, we want you guys to build pumping capacity and we'll pay for it. Or they'll build a well. So.
Simon, sorry, this is kind of, the gallons per minute were short during July. Do we have that calculated kind of somewhere? Like, are we 300 gallons per minute short on peak month, 500, 1,000? Like, how short are we during July?
Yeah, we can break those numbers out.
So this kind of shows peak day demand with variability, without conservation. So the top 100, you see conservation. There's no conservation plan. And key mostly you're going to be looking at the left column, because that's the culinary shortfall. So by 2035, we're seeing like a 600 gallons per minute shortfall.
Okay.
And just keep in mind that assumes there's a placeholder. That's assuming a treatment plant project happens.
Oh, that's assuming the treatment
plant. Yeah, so if we go back up.
It does assume that, yes, that's true.
Figure, in case that wasn't clear, Ken pointed it out, but
yeah.
The darker yellow bar is a project being completed.
And that's moving from the 2.6 to the 5.2.
That's
no, that's smaller. Okay.
Oh, that's just at the 3.4.
Yeah, that's a good segue. Next board meeting, we'll have way more in-depth presentation on what has been happening at the treatment plant. We'll shed some light.
Okay, 2.63.
Random numbers are thrown out here. Sorry.
Yeah, so there's obviously unit issues here, like going from 2.3 MG to 3.4 MG, and we're trying to be here, so.
Yeah.
I was wondering how, and if you go back to that one, we're actually better for a little while once the water comes on.
Yeah.
So that's what we're in quote unquote shortage right now, and then we'll be okay once the water comes off, but then we're back in shortage after we build more than 3 hours. Right.
And that actually does get a disconnect back and stuff. A little bit too, but that's a little bit further down.
Yeah, the 10-year window of how much will be used.
Well, and also Promontory is a different service area because their impact fee is different than ours. So I guess that was one of my other questions because that's by contract. So how does that, should that be discussed in here in the master plan, or is that is that's a lot of the growth?
We will be doing an impact fee, and part of impact fee that'll be interesting in terms of cost is like when Summit Water comes off and how you treat Summit Water is, you know, whether it's like truly an existing or like a secondary application, but we're going to basically show you have a teeny bit of excess capacity in treatment. So like those, like if you, some of those 2000 ERCs, let's say 100 or 200, will be able to buy into existing capacity at 6.9 because you have just a little bit of excess capacity based on the data here. And then everything, all the users beyond that are going to have to buy into the more expensive capacity. So I'm not sure, I haven't read through Promontory's impact fee or contract requirements, but generally any capacity that's being built at Signal Hill, if assuming it's built there, that's all going to be impact fee eligible within 10 years, that window. And so, you know, all the costs beyond that serve and growth beyond 10 years is not going to have to pay for that. That's something that we'll definitely have to have more conversations about, because we just want to be defendable. So you have like $28 million, I think, 3.4, and then another, you know, I have our
minimum
to get 5.6. So we'll want to just be very careful with that when we do the impact fee, so make sure that's defensible. But yeah, that's a whole nother topic. Yes, probably will be another board meeting. Any other questions? Go ahead.
So what was the horizon on the previous master plan?
I don't know that we...
So there wasn't a formal master plan in the past. The closest analog would be the IFFP. The 2019 IFFP for the district essentially functioned as the master plan, more or less, right, as a planning document. And that went out to, I'd have to double check, 2050 points.
Yeah, that makes sense. Gets your concentration.
Yeah. And it's interesting, I think it ended up kind of lining up pretty well with the build out numbers we came up with, which is a coincidence more than actual like design output, I would say. But I think one of the kind of just got glanced over at the beginning, but the work at establishing this build-out figure for the district and something we didn't have before, I think it's one of the biggest improvements of Bowen Collins.
The appendix will show where all those REs show up, but it's just not going to be in the body. Therefore, you can go look at those figures in the appendix.
That's what I was really interested in, was to see how they compared to, you know, what we thought we were going to. We didn't really have a build out, but we had a 2050.
Yeah, and they ended up actually fairly close.
The good thing about this, sometimes it's good at least, you know, have sort of independent, you know, verification of an assumption.
But that didn't change a whole lot because our service area boundary hasn't changed a whole lot, right?
Not since community water, yeah, I guess, 2019.
But we didn't have a treatment plan, or we didn't have any type of anything like that in our last IFFP in 2019.
Yeah, the source development included in the last IFFP was a single well.
Well, that, and that was back here, which we did.
There was a rad dish.
Yeah, wasn't it with the one right here?
Yeah, it was. It was well number 17.
But we also had the other well in there.
The tank well was 16.
Well, we had a 17th well in IFFP.
we had a well and we had a willow draw treatment plant that was maybe going to be a peaking plant.
Those were our two source. Because that's why if we wanted to drill a well, we could use impact fees we have right now because it was in the last IFMP.
Right.
Correct, right. Not that we want to, I'm just saying if we wanted to. We have, it was at least in our last IFMP.
Yep.
See, because back, so we're talking build out. So we're saying we're 8,000 out of 12,000 ERCs build out, but I think we're only maybe half connections build out. So that's where some of that reconciling in my mind of, are we overstating our ERC build out? Because our connection build out, we still have a lot more connections than the 4,000 ERCs would necessarily mean.
I think if you look at the appendix, you'll see that the units included in the future growth are mostly trying to reflect units. And that's why when we get into demand per unit, we're projecting based on historic development patterns.
And that's why we have to come up with a unified definition of ERC.
Yeah, because it's ours, so much rotates off of that. So we've got to get a good number there, at least so that we all know why we're doing that, how we're doing that math. So we all get, okay, we're here this on ERCs and here on number of connections to build out. And this is where they'll match up at the end or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I would guess for impact is we'd probably be using an approach similar to proxy where charging $1 per gallon per minute, just because you get such variability. And that'll be up to you guys.
Do you know how we calculate our impact fee right now?
I don't.
Okay, it's based off square footage. So if anything under 3,000 square feet is a 1, and everything over 3,000 feet is 3,000 feet, up to 8,000 is a multiple of that.
Yeah.
And then over 8,000, there's a irrigation factor. Yeah. So it would be a very big change in how we do impact.
And it could be done that way.
I'm not saying we want to continue to do it that way, that we have to. I'm just saying that's going to be, that could be a bigger lift than we're maybe thinking.
Yeah. And obviously we're still far out from that impact phase, but that could be part of the discussion.
So. All right.
Would it make sense to have two sets of curves? Could we track connections and ERCs? Or do we?
I do for billing.
I do because I have the number of connections we're billing and how many billing units those are.
Yeah.
Which I've historically called ERC, but Sam and I are starting to say that I can't use the term ERC. I have to call them billing unit. But we should probably kind of track those numbers together so that even under planning in the future, okay, we've got 4,000 connections left that will amount to 5,000 ERCs. You know, that's tracking how it should kind of thing. So.
Yeah. 5,000. BU, billing units.
Billing units, sorry, I said ERCs. Okay.
Okay, anything else for me?
No, thanks, Andrew.
Exciting reading.
Yes. Yeah.
You must have nothing else to do.
What else would I want to do on the weekend? Okay, so now do we need to go into executive session?
Yes. Okay. Just briefly.
Okay.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks, Andrew. Let's let Chris.
Okay. Yeah. Do we have a motion to go?
Chris, I believe we
change the
executive session.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so we are on to the consent agenda. Any questions on the last minutes? Any questions on the check register? I didn't have any questions on the check register, but I did have a couple questions on the credit card.
Oh, okay.
We seem to have a ton of hotels. Was there like an event?
There was rural water training for a lot of the operators to get their CEUs at the beginning of the month. And then at the end of the month, there was water users, which Andy, Lisa, and I attended.
Okay.
So that was a big chunk of the travel and training budget for the year was already spent.
But that's when Steve made me pay for everything.
Yeah. Could have been under my credit card, but you know. So that's why all those charges.
Okay, and then there was something called VOIGTABPOC.
Right up there, Chris. Right there, Brandon Withers.
Do we know what that was?
Void ABPOC. I will look into that. Something for Lost Canyon, but I don't know other than the booster supply reactor. Yes. With that notice.
$595. Do you know that would be Brent?
And then there was just, it looked like Codale Electric, there's like a credit left over, like there was.
Yeah. We used them enough that.
Okay, so we'll be able to use that back up.
Yeah. I think it's probably already gone.
Okay. Okay.
Probably canceled it off.
That's all I had. So do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve the consent agenda as discussed.
Okay.
Second.
Hey, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, that's unanimous. And now we're on to Steve.
Well, so, well,
I'm going to slide it to your right. There you go.
Okay. So net, so revenue, sorry, net position, we're at 378,000 for the year so far compared to a budget that was 286. We're $665,000 better than budget. That's made up of 426 better in revenue and $238,000 in savings. The revenue is mainly over because of other revenue from interest earnings that are already at $350,000 so far this year. If you recall, last year they were about $70,000 for the whole year. So that change from 0.04% to 5% is pretty significant. So when we look at revenue, we are over in retail water sales. This is mainly because we grew faster than we thought, so our base is higher. The rate model that I've been working on, I've updated that. So when we start to project costs of treatment plants or buildings or things like that, we'll have the new base in. Park City has been wheeling more water than they usually do, so that's why that's higher. The other revenue that's high is the 230. That's where the interest earnings are in the other revenue. The development related collections, which are under, that's basically impact fees, which are under. So that's why that's a little bit under. The savings in, and I put that up here in this part. So we are about $200,000 better than budget in expenses. We've had lower wages in distribution public service because of a couple of delays in hiring. Those one has actually come on at least so far. And then we have lower repair costs so far in distribution in Lost Canyon than we would have budgeted. So that's where the expense savings are coming from. Cash, the big, you know, this is kind of our low cash point of the year usually because we haven't been selling a lot of water. So this is usually our low water mark right around now. We dropped 250,000 in this because basically we had to transfer our bond payments. So basically we transferred out of here into here. So it stayed about the same, but that's why. So this is the fund where we save up for all our bond payments. So that's where that happened. Our customer growth, we're at 37 new pay impact fees so far this year or requests. Last year we were at 108. And our 4-year average is 82. So we're 45 connections down or over 50% down in new customer requests. Along those lines, our impact fees are at 112. The last couple of years, they were over 400,000 by this time. Promontory has sold 6 lots through April. Last year, they were at 32 and the year before at 43. So that development slowdown is a reality. Water usage, so far through the year, we are up 2.4% in usage. So we've done, our customers have done the 294 acre feet compared to 288 last year. The Olympic Park, as we mentioned before, is taking more water than they have. So they're at 23 so far. Park City has already wheeled over 1,000 acre feet, and they've usually been like 700 maybe by this time. And Summit Water has taken 295 of their 700 acre feet for the year.
Is there any limit to what parks they can take?
2,900.
Okay.
And then the graph. So our blue line continues higher, which it should because of the rate increase in growth, but kind of the typical kind of flat through here, a little dip in April, and now we'll have to see what happens in May. The one thing, even though we might have lower usage because of the lake melt, the fact that the base grew may help the May be pretty close to budget, we're thinking at this point in time. So we'll see. And this was kind of that look. So you can see where we're at 442 for residential, where we'd only budgeted a little under 400. The interesting thing in this number is there was one house up in the colony that used a half a million gallons of water. By accident, somebody turned on the irrigation, and so their bill was $13,000. So that's why that number is a little higher than even higher.
We work with them in those situations.
We have a leak adjustment policy, although this would not qualify because it was under construction. It wasn't. It was something somebody should have discovered.
Well, it was a valve that they
turned on. It wasn't a break underground that they didn't know was there or anything. Mm-hmm. So we try to help out customers when there's a legitimate reason, but this.
We help people if they want to spread it over time or, you know, sure, work on payment plans, of course. But as far as getting kind of adjustments, this wouldn't qualify for a leak adjustment.
The impact fees will be interesting, and I kind of said that in the verbiage. Usually it's May to September where we get most of our impact fees, so we'll know probably as we move through the summer whether we're going to get to the 600,000 for the year or not. We'll get a pretty good feel probably by July, because if we're still under through July, we'll probably end the year under. So okay. I've had three for like $20,000, budget's like 50. We do have a couple of big ones in the pipeline, but they would basically just get us back to budget. One up in the colony and one in the wild. So, but I don't have anything filling in for, let's say, June if I get those in May. So, all right. So I kind of blow through that without asking you if there's any questions, but any questions? All right.
It also looks like you're giving us an audit update.
Audit is done. It's all completed. She is in Alaska on a cruise with her daughter, so she's going to come present in June.
Okay.
But it's all done. Thank you for your feedback. Finish up. Great. You know, it's, she's really good to work with, and there wasn't, you know, anything material to adjust or change or anything. So.
Great. Okay, Lisa.
I had this is the interlocal agreement with Mountain Regional and Weber Basin for the landscape lawn exchange program. Interlocal agreement has been approved and signed by Weber Basin. That was done at their last board meeting at the end of April. So we're just looking for your signature on this agreement so that we can start using. Start marketing this to our customers, getting messaging out. We are already set up on Utah Water Savers. So if you log on to utahwatersavers.com or org, can't remember which one it is. It's up there, Mountain Regional Water, $3. So we're excited to see what kind of response we get. I will, start working with David Rice, is at Weber Basin, who will be kind of tracking the applications that come in, and we'll start seeing what kind of feedback we get. Anna and her team have already been directing people to customers to the site, knowing that we were, just a little bit of back of the house stuff, getting all these agreements signed. So any questions on the interlocal agreement?
I had a couple questions. Like, it just looked like a couple of the exhibits, some of them had like 250 square feet, some were 200 square feet, some were 35% coverage, some were 50% coverage.
I think
exhibit A has 250 and exhibit B has 200 and exhibit A and B have 50% coverage and exhibit D has 35% coverage.
Okay. Well, it should be 50 and the total amount is 200 is the minimum.
Okay.
This
Is it 200 or 250?
This one says minimum 250. That's A. Okay, B.
Yeah, so in A it was 250, B it was 200.
Let's see what John, because I knew. Yeah. I think we had 250 and then it was either one way or the other. We had 200 or 250, and then he said it needed to go to 250.
Yes, there is a difference. Exhibit A says 250 and this one says 200.
Okay. Again, I'm not sure it's super material, but.
No, I have the answer right here. Just let me figure out which one it is and I can change.
Does anyone else have any questions?
When did they sign it, you said?
Well, he just sent me this, so we have to sign ours, and then he will get Weber Basin to sign. We'll get their signature.
Well, good catch.
Oh, yeah. I'll
fix it. Sign it.
You do.
Okay. And I can always pop back over tomorrow too if you want me to come by in the morning.
Yeah. I will get that done and fixed, and I'll get you the final.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Nope.
So do we need a recommendation?
Yeah.
So recommendation for approval of the interlocal agreement between Mountain Regional Water Special Service District and Weber Basin Water Conservancy District for cooperation in the landscape lawn exchange program for the discussions and update that we scheduled.
Do we have a second? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous.
Thank you.
Okay, Sam, let's hear about the 2023 engineering projects. It seemed like there was a lot on the list.
Yeah, you know, we're still early in construction season, so nothing too exciting. So it's going to be pretty quick. But
did you send anything? Isn't the board packet in the pack? Oh, sorry.
Oh, thanks. But we are finally getting things kicked off, so it's nice to have some projects to focus on. We can go to the second page, Chris.
We're going to sell pizzas of Old Zone Park Tank 1 as an actual revenue source. So if you want yours, let me know.
I want
the old chairlifts. Or the old speech from stadiums or whatever.
The siding on my house.
Yep. Or sled.
Fireized.
Landscape tension for windows.
There we go. So the tank is completely demolished as of this morning. There's a couple pictures on the next page kind of showing some updates. So FX construction has been really good to work with so far, and it's going well. So we'll be moving on to major site excavation and hopefully avoiding any rock X, but we'll see when we get there. There's been no changes to the schedule or the contract, so it's going pretty well so far. The other large project for the year, the waterline project up on Woodland, the Woodland Drive Loop, is maybe starting as soon as this coming week, which is exciting. And I think we've been working with the county to try and find a revised approach to paving that's going to help condense the schedule a little bit after the trenching and utility work is done. So as of now, still no changes on the contract and schedule on that project as well. Down to the tier two projects, as we call them. So these are kind of under 5% of the annual operating budget. They're both betterments. So, you know, tagging on to existing promontory projects. Sage Hills Estates betterment gives us an additional transmission pathway out of promontory and into the Atkinson zone, which is the primary pathway to water from Signal Hill and the Weber River. The water line, the transmission line, is currently under construction. Stacy, our project coordinator, is keeping an eye on that. And the mechanical design for the control valve is completed, and they are currently building that off-site to bring into the building. The Browns Canyon Road betterment has not been bid by Promontory yet, but they're expecting to do so this month. So we're still operating off a internally created budget number, but we'll have a contract under there shortly. And so see where that lies.
Sam has been best. We're participating in the road extension.
So Promontory is extending the road, Painted Canyon Pass all the way to Browns Canyon, which is kind of the southwest portion of the Promontory. And it's also the focus of future development. That's where we're going to see the most active build out in the next 5-10 years of the Promontory. And we are upsizing part of that water line. That would be, it'd be an 8-inch water line if it's just for distribution in the neighborhood. But if we ever utilize it for transmission in the future, future planning, we chose to upsize it to 12-inch. Yeah. And there's also a small portion extended beyond the guard shack that's going to access Browns Canyon Road towards Browns Canyon Road. So I guess the combination of upsize and an extension. But the significant portion of the work is the upsize. That's the larger linear footage.
Going from 8 to 12 inch.
Going 8 to 12. Yeah. And extending past the guard shack under 1,000 feet.
Okay. Can we pay for that impact fees?
That was in the 2019 IFFB. It was an IFFP project. Now on the tier three projects, spine booster pump station upgrades are pretty much completed in-house, right, Chris?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're waiting on a control valve at this point. That's it.
So that's looking really good. And everything on, and everything on the exterior is completed except for some rock work. I think we're working with a third party to do the rock work on the outside of the building. So hopefully we should have that done shortly. I think the site's finally good enough shape to access. So it'll be nice to tick that one off the list. And the Silver Springs booster pump station, additional transfer pump to connect the Silver Springs tank to the White Pine tank. Mechanical work is completed, meters installed. And just waiting. Electrical, I guess, is wrapped up now too, Chris. He mm-hmm. took that piece.
Yep.
So now it's just programming and skate effort.
Mm-hmm.
And that additional pump will be able to utilize this summer potentially. So that'll be great. Help get groundwater sources out of Silver Springs. Could even potentially help us with our consecutive connection with Summit Water in the area to be able to receive more water into the spring and the Silver Springs. Those are most of the updates. The rest of the projects, Colony Herbert tank upgrade, gotta wait for snow melt up there.
So I didn't understand that one either. So are we getting rid of the tank?
Yeah, so.
And.
Go ahead.
That's what I didn't understand.
So the Herbert tank, essentially functions like a PRV near the top of the colony. And it was originally put in as a 10,000-gallon tank, and then it was controlled with an altitude valve, I believe, right?
Two
altitude valves. And because the nature of the tank, how small it was, the altitude valves just weren't fine-tuned enough to work properly. When you're talking about a pound or less than a pound of difference in water surface elevation, you can have. So the retrofit was using two flow control, or a single flow control valve. I guess a dual solenoid activated flow control valve to match flow instead of looking at pressure behind the altitude valve. But that still creates problems, and it's one of the biggest overtime producers in the district.
Yeah,
we're the design right in the first place, so that's like a problem.
And access is difficult at best.
Yeah,
but they do that. When I hear air gap, it made me think they were going to use it for snowmaking, and that's why they needed it. Mm-hmm. The air gap was just for. They didn't want to do.
The idea was they didn't want a PRV in a ski run. So they ended up having a tank involved in a ski run.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is it's literally bunkered. The control building is bunkered into the side of one of the ski runs, and then the tank is behind it.
The problem is they have a tank high enough above this vault, so the altitude valves have never worked correctly.
There's no differential.
Right.
Yeah, you need at least 5 PSI, and it is right at 4 to 5 PSI, and they just never worked.
But regardless, we have a new access to the vault now off of a driveway for a new home in the colony, so we don't need the ski run access, so that's a big improvement. And then it's easily modified to go into a typical PRV connection like we have throughout the rest of the economy. So I think it'll be a big reliability improvement.
That sounds much better.
Yeah. And then Sunpeak will do Brownouts update there. Pumps pulled.
It was videoed the other day. And
yeah, we're working on electric bids because it hasn't been touched. It was a working facility, but it hasn't been touched since before I was working here, so 2010 or something like that. We pulled the electric meter and everything off.
15 years.
We're going, and it's been sitting dormant. So we're going through the full electrical. It's kind of a disaster in there. So we're redoing a bunch of channels and locations of things to meet codes. So panel openings and stuff will pass. And trying to simplify and make it a usable spot for us. So those bids are all incoming in the next week or so.
And on paper, from a regulatory perspective, we're working through all the hoops to get it online by the end of the year, too. It's been dormant for, like we said, 15 years. So it doesn't stop what's off everything.
Yeah, it's not a big producer. Brian was saying it was 60,
70 gallons a minute.
But it's in the same, it goes directly in the same tank where we lost the spring. So it's beneficial.
Did this come to us through community water
as well? No, this is something that was part of the old Silver Springs water system.
Because there was a well, kind of like.
Yeah, there's. Never mind. No, you're on it. There's two wells that came over as part of the community water, which are separate. And there are three wells initially as part of the Silver Springs Water Company. We have only utilized one, essentially, in the past 15-ish years, the lake well, we call it.
Thank you.
That's the update.
Where did I see that you guys? There was something, and I don't know, maybe it was in the Bowen and Collins, but you guys were trying to reactivate the well by the north gate in Promontory.
Oh, yeah. So we have an active well that's disconnected from the rest of the system that's next to the north gate house in Promontory.
Back in your predecessor's day, you know, he was trying to get us to
take it back.
And it's like totally not compliant with anything, you know, I mean, it's,
yeah.
Like, I feel bad for the guys that work up that gate, and I hope they're not drinking the water out of that.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
But yeah, so anyway, I was kind of surprised that we thought that might be a viable well.
The interesting thing about that well is if you look at the aquifer testing when it was first drilled,
yeah,
the results are really promising for a fairly high yield well, but it was never equipped or designed to do so. So, one wild idea for source development, because we're trying to think of everything, is to redrill essentially at that location and target the same aquifer and then put in a very long transmission line to connect to the rest of the system somehow.
Yeah.
But it's a long shot.
Yeah, it seems like it's super duper a long shot. Yeah.
So was it installed to meet municipal standards?
I don't know if it has a sanitary seal. Yeah, I've just seen the aquifer testing. It looks good.
So but again, you can do a pipe in there.
They use it for irrigation at the North Garden House. It is not, and there's a small 10,000 gallon tank. Is that what they're? Yeah, there's a 10,000 gallon tank.
There's a toilet in the car.
There's a meter for the garden.
Yeah, they have a credit for it.
There's two meters, one for the
residents. It's not a residence.
Yeah. We own and operate it, and we take tests on it, so it's clean water.
Okay. But does it need spec? We can't like to turn it.
Yeah, it does not. It's not public water system standard, yeah. So it's not connected to our public water system.
Yeah. Just a question.
One person that gets better. We all are. And as part of the exercise with the Sun Peak well and everything, we continue to work with Jeff Gittins working on water rights, making sure we have water rights assigned to the different sources, cleaning up where things appear on the state engineer side, making sure wells are correctly on the map, making sure they're correct water rights. So that's been an exercise that Sam and Brian have been helping shepherd through. One of the other things that we've done is we have a handshake agreement right now with Weaver Basin on the Lost Canyon intake. Previously, if there'd been a problem over at Lost Canyon, we've had to get a hold of the Weaver Basin control. Typically, it's a 2 to 3 hour response time to solve a problem. We have direct control over that facility now, which should actually help us control any downtime, hopefully prevent that going through SCADA, doing a couple of other improvements. Mm-hmm. One of the things we understand is none of those pumps have ever been serviced since they've been in there. So I met with Darren Hess last week. We got a bid on a pump. We're going to start pulling pumps and putting in a new one. So at the end of the day, there's a pump on the shelf if something goes down, because that would be disastrous if we lost the intake. Yesterday, we had our first employee appreciation bowl-a-thon. Mm-hmm. Some of us did better than others. We're not going to reveal any scores. There's a couple of sore shoulders and stuff. But we also found out that Brian is a closet bowler. on Monday, I'll be.
Thought you didn't have a trampoline.
Yeah. Monday, I'll be participating in the Chamber Economic Forum. There's going to be a whole segment on water. I'll be participating with Clint from the city, Max from JSSD, and someone from Central Water. So that's up at the canyons. Our next item, I'm trying to butter you guys up for this next discussion. We had our first blush at projected costs on, our new building. There's certainly wild card with excavation and blasting over there. Go ahead, Chris, and scroll down. Here's our first blush. Keep going down a little more. Just about $17 million, for two buildings. This is based on just over a 12,000 square foot office and about an equal size shop. If you want to go down a little bit more. One of the things now we need to figure out is this, a lot of this is conceptual on what CRSA has provided. Oakland is still going to be, we hope to have our CMGC. We need to now understand Oakland's numbers. We had this in about a half an hour presentation, so there's no real meat to what those numbers are. And then we need to figure out, can we shrink the facilities and work within a budget? Do we have a competing interest in a treatment plant or other things? One of the line items in the budget is almost $1 million for just landscaping and things like that. So you just need to prioritize what is the most important to the district. Can we then phase in things over time? Can we do a conservation garden at a later date? You know, there's other things like that. So that's just the initial 50,000 foot level of where we're at.
Eddie, what was our budget that we have?
We were hoping 10 to 12.
Compared to 17.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, costs certainly are higher. There are things that I think we can cut. I mean, a lot of glass. There's a lot of other things. I think we can cut some of the office space and not build a building that's too small, but I think we can still accomplish something that would allow us, to grow.
How many square feet are we through?
So between the two, we're 5,000.
A little over 5,000. And we're looking at 12,000 here.
Yeah, that's the way it's drawn.
Right.
And so, you know, you go big and shrink as opposed to go the other way. So we're hoping to get it to a manageable number. We did meet with Brian Baker from Zions a couple weeks ago. We think there's a way to ladder in the debt so it wouldn't have a significant impact. And $17 million would have a bigger impact than we were projecting. So we need to sit down and work through the project and see how we can make it more manageable or put it off. Sam and I met, we had our concurrency meeting. As soon as I get the letter from Dave Hansen or Bill Bondurant, I will circulate that, to the board. No surprises there. All of the water providers in the basin are considered either exempt or compliant. That's all I got.
Thank you. Anything from you, Dave?
Nope. Nothing from me.
Then the last is the questions on department updates.
Didn't have
anything.
Good.
The boys are out.
No check register questions. Add no department. We're getting good.
We are trying to find a leaked NSD run in the colony. The boys have been digging today. It shows uncorrelation. It's just not surfacing anywhere. So don't put water pipes in ski runs because you got to move snow in. So hopefully on Monday they'll be able to figure out where that is, but they have it under control for now, knowing it's out of water.
Can we move this now?
Mm-hmm. It was about 500 gallons a minute. It's now pinched back, so it's
about 50.
All right. Well, if there's nothing.
I have a few things. I'm probably the only naysayer, but, I don't think we should rest on our laurels, because of the snowpack of this year. I mean, next year, there's no guarantees. The year for that, there's no guarantees, but we should be doing everything possible, to conserve water. And, if we need to get notifications out, I think we should do that. I think there's a lot of people really concerned. I mean, look, it's amazing what you hear from, I was in Florida, and it's amazing what you hear from Florida to Park City, and we just can't rest on our laurels. So I know I'm repeating myself, but anything we can do to communicate to people that they need to conserve water. Now, at the DRC that I'm involved with at Silver Creek, we're really trying to look at water usage and landscaping. But I think we really need to press that.
Can you wear that for us? We'll deputize you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Bumper sticker.
For water help.
And I think that's about it. I mean, I'm just really concerned about water. Look, we know that Promontory is supposed to go to 248 and back. There's a lot of land there. So the question really becomes, have we done enough do we have enough foresight and planning of a promontory? Because I mean, it's not, you know as well as I do, it's really not built out that much, and there's a lot of land, I mean, ready to go. If they get that road done to Browns Canyon off of promontory, that could really spur some development and growth. And I'm really, really concerned about that. I mean, we just can't rest our laurels. That's all.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely. And that's part of the topic on Monday.
Okay. All right.
Well, is West Hills the new subdivision in Suffolk County?
As the canyon.
It's not in the district, but it's...
No. But it would be just across from Browns Canyon,
right
on the backside.
Right.
But we have had the developer on Browns Canyon call us and ask if we would serve them. They would have to annex in, so that would be up to the county.
Is that the one right at the bottom of Browns Canyon Road? Or the right at the bottom of the Promontory Road?
Yeah, that new road that will go up.
The high density.
Yes, they want. Correct.
Well, I mean, we really need to. And I know you're doing a fine job, but we really need to anticipate the future. We just can't rest on our laurels.
Yeah.
From a monetary standpoint and as well as a growth standpoint, it really concerns me. There's a lot of land that's going to come into play here pretty soon. And if we don't scope this thing out, we're going to be at Schitt's Creek, as far as I'm concerned.
So is it in the master plan now?
Yeah, every
they're including
it. Okay.
Every lot that's in the development agreement with the promontory, 1920, whatever it is.
It's part of driving that curve. That's what's
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Look, I'm not trying to be a naysayer to that. That's not my point. But I mean, we're pretty smart, all of us. And we really need to take advantage and ask a lot of questions and ask the right questions because we need to be prepared for growth. I mean, a lot of people are moving out of the States to Utah, to Montana, to Texas, to Arizona. We just need to stay on top of this thing, or we're going to be in some serious problems in the future. And I don't want that to happen.
I think we can stay on top of it. I think, but it's going to be bringing a new source in, right? And it's going to be really expensive. There's not any more water up here at the top of the basin, right? And this step function, now that all the easy water's gone, I think that next impact fee is going to be, if we have to take down an $80 million project.
Well, and we're trying to do this interim step to prevent the mother step, the big East Canyon.
Importation.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can, there's maybe some optimizations.
Yeah, I just want to see it, get it, where,
that
call
impact
up heads
fee
up.
To, is going to be the one that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have to balance, of course, the impact fee is projected to pay for the project, but we have to create the project before we collect the impact fee. So your current subscribers are going to have to pay something toward that. And so it's that balancing act of when, how much, how big, where. And that's why we have Bowen Collins trying to give us a master plan. Jacobs will come next month. Bowen Collins will then come back with the second and third portion, which will lead into the IFFP, which will hopefully give us the IFFA. I mean, we're kind of on this timeline getting us to the fall so we can go out and we can start budgeting. You know, is the growth really at a standstill? But how long do you wait before the next huge burst and then you're caught short? And yeah, so that's the balancing act. Those are the decisions that we're going to be asking you to help us make as we kind of project, and we're trying to give you the best data that we know. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we have with an ERC is in the IFFA or the IFFP, it's defined one way, and a promontory agreement is defined another way. The state defines it a different way. The sewer district defines it a different way. We need to come up with a common definition so we're all working off the same data and information so we know what. And so that's where we're at. So no pressure on you.
I at least I feel like the thing today was like hopefully the worst case scenario.
So I had another question. On last month, we talked about some water in that connection coming down from Park City to some water, kind of the canyons. Did that go anywhere?
The
224 project?
Yeah.
So we have a meeting on the day after Memorial Day. So more than likely we'll end up participating in that interconnect to free up capacity in the Highway 40 system. If we can send our water to Park City and buy ourselves some time, it should relieve a little pressure on a 2028 date. But the biggest caveat to that is we need to make sure that whatever we send to Park City is not a perpetual obligation, because that's just will be an added expense. If we have a facility where we could, you know, we're going to upgrade and treat it, but then we have to send 500 acre feet down the street and pay to get it back.
Kind of that idea of moving instead of expanding Signal Hill, treat it at
give
Park
us,
City.
Give us an interim step to send it to Park City, because Quinn's could run out of capacity.
Or a source.
Of treatment capability, right?
Okay. They
because that plant has limitations.
Yeah.
So it may give us an interim step to send water that way, upgrade, and then buy us time to upgrade our own treatment plant so we can control our own destiny and then just take it back and potentially put water back on the table to sell. So there's a bunch of moving pieces, and it's which way do we go? Because, I mean, that interconnect projected about $2 million obligation for us. And the only benefit to us would be Highway 40.
Kind of have a Park City treat the water for us.
Yeah, but then the limitation right now is the ability to get it back because Highway 40 now is fully subscribed.
What's Highway 40?
The existing pipeline that gets water from Park City to Summit.
How Summit buys wholesale water from Park City.
So it goes from Park City to Quinns Junction up to the Section 27,
yeah,
over to Trailside, okay, and then however they disperse it.
That's how we're getting water.
That's how Park City is.
Getting water.
We're sending water through Old Ranch, the Old Ranch Road.
But that's how we would get it if we were to send water to Quinns for Park City to treat. That's the pipeline that would get water back to us as well. But it's currently the capacity is all Summit water. So by doing the other project on 224, that frees up the space in the Highway 40 system for us to get water that Park City could potentially treat.
Because Summit wouldn't need to take it through
the other
way. Right, they take it the other way.
They take it through 224.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. So how does that fit in? Is that in the master plan as source?
It is considered, but just at like 110 gallons, so sort of small.
And we can, next month, I think we'll give a nice overview comparing options of an interconnect between an expansion project.
Yeah.
So we'll then fill in the blanks.
Okay. I'll have to be patient.
There's a lot of moving parts right
now. Not very good at that. There is.
But if anyone else has insider comments or thinks we should explore something else or something that you've seen, we'd love to know that while things are in a draft form.
Snyder River Basin's got a reuse water pipe sitting in the ground that will never ever be used if you just want to tie into it on either end.
Someone
directly use. No more questions.
No more questions? Okay. Well, with that, we will stand adjourned at 7:51.